it's Sarah, and we're coming up on November, which, aside from just being a shocking thing, considering how both excruciatingly long and impossibly short this year has been, is also pretty cool because it's National Novel Writing Month. Many, many, many authors who are Fated Mates faves started their careers writing their first romance novel or drafting their first romance novel in the month of November, alongside tens of thousands of other people from around the world at NaNoWriMo.org. This year, I'll be doing my best to help. For those of you who are out there thinking about starting your first romance novel, or maybe starting your fifth or tenth romance novel, I'm hosting a two-hour online course on October 30th, just in time for NaNoWriMo, to talk about starting your romance novel as soon as possible. During the class, we'll cover everything from creating high concept ideas to building great characters and mining great conflict, which is, as you know, a favorite of ours here at Fated Mates. And of course, avoiding the dreaded pitfalls that are inevitable as you write your book. Most importantly, we'll talk about keeping the pages turning and the words flowing as you write your first draft. So whether you were planning on writing a romance novel in November or you just needed that one thing from the universe to tell you it was time to start, I hope you'll join me on October 30th at 1 p.m. Eastern for a two-hour live class. If you can't make it, you can register for the class and the video recording of it will be available to you for the entire month of November for you to return to as you're drafting. And I hope you'll join me. I'm super excited. You can check show notes for a link, or you can visit sarahmclain.net/writing-romance. On with the show. It's October, and so we are required by law to
Monster Mash
talk about monsters, right?
It is a thing.
I believe we got a letter in the mail telling us to make sure we did our
time.
Did our duty to Romancelandia. That voice you hear, everyone, is that of Jenny Nordbeck.
Hi.
From the Wicked Wallflowers and Bonkers Romance Podcast. She needed another podcast to be on.
Yeah.
It's because she has such a great voice.
I just really like hearing myself talk.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, you're also an audiobook narrator now. Jenny is coming to us from a very, very professional looking sound booth.
Oh, yeah.
We are coming to you from our bedrooms.
Yeah, I'm in a sound booth, but I have like a golem head and some sex toys that somebody sent me. Like, I don't know how professional it really is, but it looks legit.
From the outside.
It does look pretty amazing. Yeah. Well, and then we were like, is it a closet? Like, where are you? It's all very, very professional looking.
It really does look great. I really thought she had like, you know, tricked out a closet, but no, Jenny does it right. That's what
I mean, it helps
Jenny
that my husband
start.
Can build things. I would not have been pulling this off on my own. So when I'm like, I want that sound booth, and my husband is like, okay, and he spends the weekend building it for me.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that's lucky. Welcome everyone to Fated Mates. I am Sarah McLean. I read romance novels and I write them.
I am Jennifer Prokop. I am a romance reader and editor.
So exciting. So exciting. Yeah. I was
and
doing
actually,
a podcast yesterday with somebody, yeah. Jen. I was doing a podcast without you yesterday. I know. We'll talk about it later when we're not in front of the kids. And you came up and the person I was doing the podcast with said, I just feel like now that I heard, it was Allie from Old Town Books, Allie who owns Old Town Books in Alexandria, Virginia. And she said, I just felt like the second I heard Jen describe herself as an editor, I thought, I have to write my romance novel now. And I was like, you do. Jen will edit it.
That's quite a compliment.
As a matter of fact, I edited Jenny's book. So in fact, we can have like a real life testimonial right here, right now.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
I mean, you're sort of putting her on the spot.
No, I texted Jen before we started and I was like, am I allowed to rave about you as an editor? Because if I'm not, you need to tell me now so that I can like silence that part of
my
brain.
Wasn't that nice of her? So yeah.
Because she is phenomenal. And like, I've worked with a handful of editors now and have like a sense of how that works. And Jen just has this magical romance brain, and you see it in Fated Mates, like when you're discussing stuff, the way that you can break things down and analyze them and whatever, but she can just look at a story and like see what it is supposed to be doing and how it is not doing that and how to twist the parts so that they come together. And yeah, I was just thanking her before we started, like, because I'm getting these like rave reviews about the book and I'm like, I don't think this would be happening if Jen had not unfucked the beginning of my book. So,
well, wait, and let's talk about this book that you're getting rave reviews for. Let's name it, first of all. Yes. That's always a good way to sell a book, is to say the title.
It is an important part of finding a book. It's called His Leading Lady.
And it is a celebrity romance.
Yeah, it is a fake dating enemies to lovers romance between like a very famous A-list celebrity and an elite dominatrix who he has hired to like roughen up his image, but also teach him how to play this like dark, morally dubious part that he can't quite figure out because he's like Mr. Wholesome. So
nice.
It's fun.
Yeah, I like it. And it's super hot, everybody. I mean, not that that's important to me, but it is super hot. It is important to me also.
Someone tweeted and asked, does it bang?
Who are you talking to? Just like every Fated Mates listener is like, what? That's a lie.
I know. I was being silly.
Yeah.
It bangs. It bangs. It bangs like a storm door, or like a screen door in a hurricane. It bangs. It's great.
Well, I have not read it yet, but I am on the record for being like a ridiculous celebrity romance fan. So it is on my list for next week because I'm going to tell you all, my mom is having knee surgery. So I'm going to be a daughter next week, and I'm going to take Jenny's banging book with me.
Oh, yeah.
And read it in my childhood bedroom.
That brings me untold delight.
If anybody would love that, it's Jenny Nordbeck for sure. Yeah. But believe it or not, we are not here today to talk about celebrity romance. Jenny has a different topic in mind for us.
Yeah, I was like, can I please talk about monsters? Please let me talk about monster romance.
It feels like Jenny wanted to talk about monster romance so badly that she started a romance novel podcast, another one, just for...
It happened.
It's not supposed to be monster romance. It's bonkers romance, but it's mostly monster romance.
There's quite a bit of monsters
talking about some random historical.
No, we did, because I think it was one of you who wrecked it to me, possibly, the fourth episode that will be out by the time this comes out is Hold by Claire Kent, like Prison Planet.
It's great.
That's a great
book.
That's
me. I love that book.
Oh,
yeah. It blew my mind when I finally read it.
That book is amazing.
Yeah. So we're not doing only monsters on the podcast, but there's a lot of monsters happening on the podcast.
Even your little, you have a great logo and there's like a little tentacle.
A little kraken. Mm-hmm.
Like swinging out there.
So it's interesting because I think monsters, so obviously it's October, so of course there's a theme here, but also monsters are really hot right now in romance. That's not to say that they didn't exist before this year, but it feels like before this year they were in a quiet corner of the pool and now they are much louder. Do you feel that way?
Yes, but I feel like paranormal was really hot for a long time, but it was sort of like it was always kind of restricted to kind of the IAD group, right? Vampires, witches, werewolves.
Which is not what we are talking about, for the record.
No.
So it feels like the monster romances we're talking about are just like pushing past those, that kind of regular group, for lack of a better word, into monsters that are... I don't even know what, Jenny. Maybe you should talk about it more.
Yeah, so I have notes. I have an outline. This is a thing that is happening.
Jenny's like a stern teacher.
I feel an obligation to properly represent the monster romance subgenre. And I have to say that Lee Kramer and Katie Robert are my like monster romance buddies who we constantly DM each other monster romance wrecks. So they need some credit for this journey that I'm on. But what counts as a monster is something people ask a lot if they're not reading it. And I think what you said, like there's IAD where you've got like a demon, mm-hmm. but if they can like throw a hat on and walk through New Orleans and people don't freak out, it's probably not a monster. So I think in general, it's like non-humans, and usually they don't shift to be a human during sex. So you have shifter books where like they can be a monster or a creature or whatever, and then they shift and have like normal human sex. But these monsters in general stay monsters. I think a few of my wrecks get a little more human-y, but there's some wiggle room in there. I think the way I often describe it is like, it's Beauty and the Beast, but he stays a beast. Like, there's no man right at the end. And there is a lot of potential crossover between like paranormal and aliens and monsters. But the way that I describe it to people is if this person, this being, could like walk down the street, and it would make sense for someone to run away screaming, ah, it's a monster. Then, I'm going to count that as a monster.
Okay. So right now, it feels like that we're talking, we have seen, let's do the range of monsters, because I feel like there are orcs and there are kind of humanoid monsters. So
I have
like
a gargoyle I'm going to talk about. Yeah,
orc, the Minotaur in a weird way felt human.
I mean, they've got to be human,
but there's like a spider.
Yes, so the spider is starting to get away from being as human,
and their tentacles, like there's krakens and others.
Yeah, like mermaids and like all sorts of dragons.
Wait, are mermaids monsters?
I don't know. I would argue they could be. Like, particularly the mermaids that I'm thinking of, who are like the vengeful, scary mermaids who will like pull you to the depths. And
okay, because I'm thinking of like Marie,
the Little Mermaid. Sorry.
No, I'm talking about Marjorie Liu's Merman. That book was called Soul Song, and it was out in the early aughts with all the other paranormal series, and he was a merman. But he did, like, have legs most of the time. Like, when he was on land, he had legs. I feel like that's the problem. If, you know, the Minotaur is a good example of, you know, he was a flat-out Minotaur the whole time. He had hawks and hooves.
Yes. Well, I feel like that's hawks, a really good
H-O-C-K-S.
Yeah, it feels like a good distinction to me is the, like, shifting part.
They don't shift.
They don't shift. Although I am going to talk about a book with a shifter, but I feel like there was like a little addition that makes it.
Oh yeah, I have a shifter too. That's a little monstery, but it's a different kind of shifting.
Well, I've got some shifters who are human and then shift to their monster form to bang.
See, now this is like interesting.
There can definitely be some shifting,
because Christine Feehan kind of edged up on this in the late aughts, like right around like 2008, 2009, Christine Feehan was writing all these like big cat shifter heroes in her famous series.
Right, the leopards ones. Yeah.
And they were, but there was always, the hard limit was they fucked as humans.
Yes. Wasn't there even, okay, look, am I making this up? I feel like I heard at some point that if you're shifter romances, they're fucking as animals, Amazon was going to cut you out of the Kindle store for bestiality.
Ooh. Is that
true?
That too.
And I wonder if, like,
but like spiders are fine.
Because you can't really fuck a spider or a kraken. But maybe people out there are like, maybe I can take on that tiger. I don't
know. Put the children away, everyone. I mean, by now, four seasons in, you should be putting the children away. But just in case.
Well, yeah, if you see my name on something and you're not putting your headphones on, I don't know what to tell you.
Sure. But I mean, maybe that's why, right? Like, because there was this limit, if you made the monsters like more fantastical, then it was less of a, more like aliens almost, right? Because you can fuck an alien. Well,
this is going to be now the only thing anybody remembers about this episode is that I'm about to potentially, in some people's eyes, defend bestiality. And I'm not, but the problem with bestiality is not that you're fucking a panther.
Kicked off the Apple store.
Yeah. The problem with bestiality is that the panther can't consent. Like, if they are a cognizant,
a sentient being. And there's like a sentience that's required. There's that great cartoon. I have to find it, but it's like the cartoon that's like, what is okay and what is not okay?
Yeah, yeah. So
I do not know this cartoon.
I'm going to find it. We're going to put it in show notes.
Everybody look down right now.
Yeah, look down. We're going to use it as an image.
Right.
Sorry.
Amazon is not known for nuance. So yeah, if they just are like, nope, that's bestiality. We're sweeping this whole thing into bestiality. If there's shifters that do the thing as shift in their animal form. So,
but spiders are fine. Also minotaurs, because minotaurs aren't real and spiders are very small.
But I think some of these books have been having a hard time.
The Morning Glory Milking Farm for a little bit was
was in the dungeon,
shoved into the Amazon erotica dungeon. Mm-hmm. So we should talk about that too. There's on Amazon, there is what's called the dungeon, which is if you write a book that is problematic in some, we talked about this a little bit with Nikki Sloan when we had her on to talk about erotica and erotic romance. And so if you have a book that edges up on some of these questionable topics or questionable events, Amazon will remove you from search. So even if you go to Amazon.com and you search Nikki Sloan Sordid, for example, or Morning Glory Milking Farm, it will come up as no results found. But the truth is that if you have a direct link to that item, it exists. It just doesn't exist in search.
Yeah, it's wild.
And
they don't tell you. You don't get notified.
And you don't. You can't protest it either. I mean, the protest is difficult.
Yeah.
It's been happening with some content warnings as well. Like, authors have been trying to be better about putting content warnings on the front of their books, and Amazon has been using that to flag books as this belongs in the dungeon.
Well, this is a very big concern about content warnings that a lot of people have rung bells about from the start, that when we start using that stuff as authors and readers to identify things that are in these books, that at some point, someone is going to start saying, well, any book that has this content in it, even if it's carefully, you know, tackled or, you know, handled, is going to get banned or, there's going to be a struggle.
Yeah. They start policing it that way. Yeah. So it's an interesting conundrum. But so far, monsters some of them have been having, I think, A Lady of Rooksgrave Manor.
Yep.
That was one put in the dungeon.
That got dungeoned. Yeah.
So but I think if we can, you know, as it gets more mainstream, they're going to have to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah.
But
the cynical part of me is kind of thinking, like, look, at some point, Amazon's just going to deplatform all of it. But then there's part of me that's like, they must make a lot of money off of readers like us. So will they really? But I definitely think that readers and authors especially, I think, have to be really mindful that content warnings can be used against them.
Well, I also think that there's something to be said for the argument that, and this is something that comes up often, and when anything sort of strange happens, when some, you know, prices get shifted or books, you know, ebooks get taken down, or, you know, someone gets plagiarized and like the plagiarized document becomes an Amazon title. I think this kind of stuff happens all the time, but we only hear the bells ringing when it happens to a book or an author who is large enough and has a large enough platform for readers to get upset. And so I just want to acknowledge that, like, books are getting dungeoned all the time that don't deserve to be dungeoned. And if you're lucky enough to have a book on TikTok that gets dungeoned, you might have some recourse in getting yourself out of it.
Yeah.
So it's just something to think about as your reader. If you start to, you'll start to see this now that you know that it exists as you're looking, especially on Amazon in the Kindle store.
Yeah. I mean, it's something I was having to be really careful about, even with His Leading Lady, where it's like, I'm talking about kink and whatever. And it would be really easy if I had to be careful about my blurb. There's no mention of a dominatrix in my blurb. There's no mention of BDSM in my blurb. Like, you have to know these things. And if you look at it and you're like, why is she trying to hide the fact that it's a dominatrix? Uh-huh. And it's like, kind of, yeah, because Amazon is going to put it in the dungeon.
Wow.
And not the fun dungeon.
Not the fun dungeon.
Not ironically, the one you want to be in.
Interestingly, this was a conversation we had, not even just books, but like Melody and I, for the Bonkers Romance podcast, were going to set up a Patreon and decided to set up our own independent members site off of Patreon.
Sure.
Because of the nature of what we're talking about. Like,
yeah,
they could suddenly decide tentacle porn is bestiality and they're shutting down our entire Patreon and we have no recourse.
Right.
So, right. But we don't have that option to subvert Amazon as easily.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting problem.
So, all right. Now that we've done that,
yeah,
let's get back into it.
Before we like really go into the monster romance, I had tried to answer the question of like, when did this become interesting to me? Because you're saying it's sort of becoming a trend in romance, but I was like, this predates romance for me. Like, when did Tiny Jenny suddenly get an interest in monsters?
Yeah.
And the answer is Fantasia.
Okay. Wow. So like Tiny Jenny. Yeah,
this is... goes way, way back. And it's not even like, do you remember the scent? And I'm sure Fantasia is problematic. I have not seen it in many years, but it was made in the 40s. It has to have problematic stuff in it. So I'm throwing that disclaimer out there. But do you remember the centaurs? There's like the girl centaurs and the boy centaurs. Mm-hmm. And there's like these little, they're like getting them ready and they're so pretty. And so there was that. But more than that, there's Chernabog at the end, the like demon who's summoning the spirits. And he's like, muscular, and he has these big wings, and he's menacing, and he's so powerful. And I think that was like, I was done for at that point.
But so it's interesting because you came on season one of Fate of Mates to talk about Sabine and Rydstrom's book. And so, and you're an avowed IAD lover. And Chernabog at the end of Fantasia always reads as Cian, the hero of Wicked Abyss to me. See also Tim Curry as demon devil man in Legend, right? So I'm with you on this. I too went down this rabbit hole and then found, you know, paranormal and, but there is something more, right? It's a slipperier slope to go from.
Yeah.
It's one thing to go to satyrs and then demons who all, again, have humanoid forms. It's another thing entirely to make the leap into, and now they're not human. They don't have human form, right? They're spiders.
Yeah. Yeah. And the progression for me is then like the Gargoyles TV show. Like they're still pretty human. They're very similar to that demon, but they're massive gargoyles and you can't really say that they're human. And then we get to like Lord of the Rings with orcs and spiders. Like Melody joked that I'm a spider hipster because when we did this episode about Ensnared by Tiffany Roberts, the spider book, I was like, I've liked spiders forever. And she's like, oh, you liked spiders before they were cool. And it's true. Like the concept that there is this massive creature who has like built-in bondage abilities and like it that
would
was
appeal to you.
Me.
Oh yeah,
sure.
There you
really
go.
Really formative age.
Sure.
Like, they have skills. They can do things.
So I have a question, which is, and I what's interesting to me too about a lot of the things you mentioned is they're like animated or illustrated, I think, right? So is there
except Lord of the Rings, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess, right? But I mean, I Fantasia or you know, and so I wonder if there's a way too that these things become, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, one of the things that I think is interesting about these books, which I read a bunch of this week kind of for research reasons, is a lot of these books are pretty soft. Like, right, these characters are not actually, like, we talked about mafia romance as being, like, horror romance. And I feel like it's true in a way. But, like, these books are also kind of horror romance in the classic sense that they contain, you know, sort of, like, supernatural creatures or something unsettling or disquieting. Like, if you think about horror as, like, a continuum, these would be, like, the softer kind of horror books where you just feel, like, ooh, a little scary, but not, like, Saw or whatever.
This is R.L. Stine's Goosebumps romance.
Yeah, right? I mean, in the sense that these characters and... we talked about this before the pod started, but it does seem very gendered, right? Like most of the monsters that I read were men,
or the male characters. And they all seem like good guys, though.
That's where I'm at. It's this, it's like kink. It's that sort of abduction kink or that kind of, so many of them have some sort of like sacrifice built into them where the human woman is sacrificed to, you know, presented to the monster as a sacrifice potentially, or even just to, if it's not an overt sacrifice, a sort of metaphorical sacrifice to the monster. But he's always like kind and good. And, you know, I'm thinking about, I'm thinking about, well, I mean, I don't know. In the ones that I've read, he's usually like a decent dude. It's that kind of, it's like, I want my kink, but I want it to be softer than what I'm getting from mafia romance or a, you know, sex trafficking romance.
Right. Well, you maybe can't get the escapism from a mafia romance because it's too real.
Sure.
Like, it's, this could, is a thing that could really happen. But when it's an orc, it's just like so clearly in this fantastical universe that it maybe is more escapist. But I think there's a spectrum of monster romance.
Yeah.
And at one end, you have like light, fun, playful, soft, like, often it's not, it's like two monsters together or like a banshee and a kraken or like, and they're, you know, one of the books on my list is Girls Weekend, where they're like, it's elves who've gone to an orc nudist resort for the weekend.
That's written by the same woman who wrote
Morning Glory Milking Farm.
Yes, it is. And it's just like fun. And the fact that they are monsters is kind of incidental to the plot. Like, it's obviously important from a reader standpoint, but it's not about them being monsters. They just are these beings, and it's playing with the fantasy space in a fun, erotic, light way.
Yeah.
Versus at the other end of the spectrum, you have the like darker, more intense stuff that would be more comparable to like a mafia romance where there is abduction. You're potentially playing with questions of consent and people's ability to properly consent. It's like more serious. There's like danger. Right. It's, you know, so it, they're almost like completely different books. Like to compare the two is almost laughable. So,
right.
But it's fun that you can do both with monsters.
The thing that I think is interesting, and I just was thinking about it, is like when we talked about the difference between like paranormal and fantasy, we often talk about world building as being like the big difference, right? So paranormal is just like everything's kind of normal, but here are some vampires. And I feel like largely that is also true of monster romance, that they come more from the paranormal family tree of I am inserting a monster into like a light world building situation, if there's any. Right. And so I think maybe that could be another appeal is like I get the fantastical kind of fun element that I would from fantasy, but I don't have to necessarily either as an author or a reader commit to like the very serious world building that fantasy requires. Mm. So, I mean, I think maybe the other part of it is it just makes more sense to me that it's like, you know, from that the paranormal family tree, but just further out on the branch.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you get to play with this fun thing in some of them where you've got a creature that is so different from humans, like in Ensnared by Tiffany Roberts. It's the spider alien romance. This like spider creature being does not understand what a human body is or does. So they get to kind of discover each other in this really cute, sexy, interesting way that you don't get when there's two humans. And I think that I'm finding is something that's appealing to me, where it's like this other creature and you're learning about each other and it's like weirdly innocent, but like it's just this interesting space to play with that you can't do in a more traditional romance.
Well, you can, but one of them has to be a virgin and then that's like weighted down with a bunch of other crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you also get, I mean, it's like power and danger potentially. And don't we?
Yeah.
Most of us, like, that is like, why do we like billionaires and bikers and assassins? And it's like, anytime you can put that power and that danger together, it's like the id buttons in your brain. And when you've got like a an all-powerful gargoyle who can, like, protect you from bullets. Like, tell me that that's not the power and danger id buttons getting hammered.
We are sponsored this week by Radish, Romance That Feels You. Radish is a comprehensive romance fiction library penned by talented, popular writers. Bottomless content, one cute app. Sarah, what are you reading this week on Radish?
So, you know, I...
So, okay, we're all romance readers. So yes. We all know that tropes are queen here in romance land. And one of the things that I like the most about Radish is that when you're just sort of like, I don't know what I want to read. I want to read something pretty sexy.
You and know the itch you want to scratch.
It just like scratches the itch. Well, this morning I woke up and I was like, I really want to read a best friend's brother story. And you know, I know, don't at me. I know. We did a whole episode on it. But I love it.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's an amazing trope.
So I'm reading today. I'm not finished with it, but it's pretty great. I'm reading Gemma James's Swallow Me Whole, which...
What a title. I'm not mad about it.
So, I mean, look, it's a name is destiny. The premise is that the main character, Sadie... has a terrible boyfriend, and right in the first chapter, one of my favorite openings, she walks in on her terrible boyfriend in flagrante with another woman, with his assistant. It's like so cliche.
Oh, man.
And then she goes out with her best friend and her best friend's twin brother, who happens to be delicious. And things happen, and then suddenly she's, you know, doing things with her best friend's twin brother, and I'm for it.
And see, this is what's great about Radish. You are going to find whatever it is you're looking for. So Radish has a special offer for our listeners, which is that you can receive 24 free coins when you sign up at radish.social/fadedmates. You can use that to read Swallow Me Whole or any other of their exclusive episodic series. Either way, we think it's something any enthusiastic romance fan will want to check out.
Thanks again to Radish for sponsoring our show. I keep coming back to why a monster, right? Like, I'm really wrapped up in what gets released by the fact that the hero, in most cases, it is the hero, is this monster, this at least on surface, a monster being, right? So I read a book by Tara Phillips. I read Ensnared by the Orc, right? Which is set in a kind of like out of time in a lot of ways. The heroine feels modern, but it's set in a kind of time that doesn't have much technology. It's a little medieval too. And the heroine falls into a trap that has been set for trespassers on, you know, the heroine is a human. And it's set on, there's like a boundary between the human land and the orc land. And she goes in there for romance reasons and falls into a trap with her troll hound, her giant dog. And the hero comes along and saves her, like rescues her from this trap, which because he is a trapper and he did not mean to catch her. But the second he sees her, he's like, hey, do you want to get married? And she's like, no, not really. and then they go back to like Orcville. And in Orcville, you discover, and this is the third in a series. I did not read the first two because I just picked the one that had the like trope I was most interested in. But she gets back there and there are these other human wives. And it turns out all orcs born, like even half orcs are born male. So they have to marry outside of their
species? This is a very orc thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this is like orc mythology?
It tends to be consistent in a lot of orc books.
Okay.
And I don't know if that goes back to like Lord of the Rings, they're all male.
Right.
Or there's probably something else to it.
Okay.
Yes.
See, I did not know. So I was just like, oh, this is fascinating. Like there are, you literally cannot be a female orc. So like in order for you to end up with an orc, you have, like it has to be species, like he has to feel monstrous in some way for you to end up with an orc.
I mean, that's, I think from what I've read, pretty common. Almost every book I read was sort of like, you know, all the Kraken are mostly males, or it's really hard. There's not as many. I mean, Ice Planet Barbarians.
What's the deal on that?
Well, look, I mean, you guys were living in a time where we're really grappling as a society with, like, people acting in ways we think are monstrous. I don't actually think it's all that.
Yeah. I mean, but for as many of those books as I can come up with, I can come up with a bunch where it's like they're both these paranormal creatures. And yeah, like there's definitely something to what Jen is saying, where it's like, what if the monster's not really a monster? Like, they look like a monster to everybody else, but you know.
I'm just going to say, like, I have like a knee-jerk negative reaction to that, Jen, only because like they're so on the one side of the spectrum, they're so soft. So like, are we really saying like this is, let's just write the monsters and like write them decent? Which is like, oh God, then what are these books, right? I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying like, wah.
Isn't this every white woman in America who's like sleeping with a Republican right now? Like, but I know he's really good inside, so it's okay.
But that implies that they realize that that's problematic, and that they are, you know, that he's a monster, but she's not a monster, and she is self-aware enough to recognize that, like, he's a bad man, and she doesn't agree with him. And I think in many of those cases, the women are just as complicit.
I struggle with that because I feel like when we talked about dark romance, we hammered home this idea that, like, kink is, you know, this is a real kink for a lot of women, right? Like, Nisha had the numbers, sure. Like, 1 in 4 or 1 in 6 women, like, have these kind of fantasies. So the books serve a fantasy purpose that we should respect because women's brains exist in the world.
Of course. But I mean, I think horror, okay, like, if we just talk about it as horror.
I don't think this is horror the way that those are horror.
But I feel like they have to be. Like, monsters have always been a big part of horror. And one of the reasons that the appeal of horror is so great is it's, like, a safe exploration of, like, the dark side of humanity.
Yeah.
And so that's always been the case with horror. And so I don't think you can say, like, you know, it's just because it's monster fucking, it's not horror anymore. I think,
but, like, we didn't feel this. We never had this conversation during IAD, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And is that because now we're 4 years in and we're just smarter? Or is it because there's something different? I guess that's what I'm asking is, like, is there really a difference? Or is this just, like, the future of IAD is, like, spiders and shit? Because these creatures, interestingly, for those of you who are with us in IAD or have read IAD, this is Pravis country.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's Veritas Army, which is all the, like, vampires and demons and, again, humanoids. Mm-hmm. And then there are, like, the Pravis, and those are the monsters, quote.
But Cressley herself is even starting to play with the idea that they may not be as cut and dry bad and good as she has, like, initially led us to believe. And, yeah, the, like, Veritas are all kind of more humanoid, and then when you get on the other side, they do get more monstrous, but...
Yeah, it's like snakes and shit.
Yeah, but I think even she is testing this idea that, like, these are not... Like, that they have been traditionally thought of as, like, monsters and bad and whatever, but that, like, they're not all bad, or that, you know, there's,
right,
like...
Once you get to the Torture Island movement, you start to see, like, oh, maybe it's actually the humans who are bad. Like,
yeah.
So...
To me, like, werewolves and vampires and witches, they also come from, like, a literary tradition and from Twilight and from, right, ways that are, like, we just don't associate them as much with horror, because horror is also about how these creatures act.
But I think that might be a personal thing, because I don't associate monsters with horror. I associate them with mythology. And I think there's, like, an older literary tradition of monsters in mythology that is not necessarily horror. Like, in Greek mythology, in fact, in any mythology, yeah, I can come up with from archaeology, you often have monsters and humans fucking or, like, interacting in a way that isn't, you've got these, like, god creatures or demigods or, and they're not necessarily out to kill the humans.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, I mean, particularly like imagery, I can come up with some that we can share. But mm-hmm. like, yeah, you've got all kinds of imagery. You have like Zeus going around fucking everybody as like various yeah. forms
animals,
of
right?
Zeus. Mm-hmm. Lots of different forms of animals.
One of the things that I thought was most delicious about Morning Glory Milking Farm was when he retells the mythology of the Minotaur.
Yes.
That the virgins were going into the labyrinth and they were getting eaten, but they were getting eaten really well. Not yeah. like, you know, consumed.
Not sacrificed.
I was deeply charmed by that whole book, but I was really charmed by how the twisted mythology of that. But again, I'm not sure I ever would have thought of the Minotaur. I mean, I guess the Minotaur is a monster. I mean, sort of the one of the early monsters, literally eating virgins as sacrifices.
Yeah.
But he was so nice and also a millionaire. He wore a tie and
sure.
But to some extent, explaining why it works for me, and horror does not work for me. For me, there is like zero interest in horror that relates to monsters. Like, I have a hard line with horror. Is sort of like trying to explain any of my other kinks. Like, why am I interested in
sure, right.
dubious consent or non-con? And I can rationalize it to some extent. Like, I can explain that monsters are powerful and you can up the stakes and there's some danger there. But like, to some extent, it's just like that thing where it's like, I have been interested in this since I was teeny tiny yeah. Jenny watching Fantasia.
This is one of those things about romance, right? That I think sometimes when we, you know, God knows I love to unpack romance.
But sometimes you can't do it in the moment. You need the distance.
And yeah. also part of the joy of romance, what's packed into romance and gives us all such happiness when we read it and like pushes our buttons when we read it, is that it is hardwired in some way. Sometimes there are things that you can't fully understand because romance is just smacking you in the
id.
Right? It's like happening. Synapses are firing because you're just getting pleasure out of it. It's a dopamine hit. So I do think there is some of that here too. But I also think to Jenny's point initially, one of your early points, Jenny, when you said it's also about like a big bad protector.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You are in the spider's web. No one else can get to you because they have to go through the spider to get to you. And he's not going to allow that.
Yeah, I mean, another theme that you see a lot, particularly with like orc romances or some of the darker ones, is like the woman is with a horrifying man. Like her husband is abusive and terrible and horrible and whatever. And the orc kind of kidnaps her, but also saves her. So like the example I'm thinking of right now is The Lady and the Orc by Finley Fenn. And like her husband is horrifyingly bad. And it initially seems like it's bad that she's been kidnapped by this orc. But then he's like, he treats her the way that she deserves to be treated.
Right. It's like frying pan into the fire, but it's not so bad over here. In fact, it's quite nice.
But in that one, it's like the early description of him, you know, is like she's been taken not just by any orc, by Grimmar, like the captain of the orcs, the most notorious
sure. orc. The big duke of the orcs.
The first orc to unite the five clans in 300 years. And that's appealing as shit. Where like, if I'm going to be taken by an orc, I don't want to be taken by the grunt orc.
No, you don't want like accountant orc. You want like king orc. Yeah. We love accountants.
I think one of the things, though, I mean, I guess, and like, this is interesting to me because, like I said, all of this is like, I did some research this week, but these books I read were like, I felt a little like an anthropologist. I was like, this is interesting to me, but it doesn't, like, I don't have
it's not giving you pants feelings.
No, not at all. It's giving me interesting, like, brain feelings. One of the things I guess I want to say is, and I'm fascinated. I'm going to spend a lot of time thinking about this, like, mythology piece. But, like, realistically speaking, like, we all call it monster fucking. And I think that there's a part of me that's like, nobody's calling mythology fucking. And I think that there's a part of that that's also about, like, something that's, like, wild or untamed or, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the limits of that really in human society where, you know, everything is so, you know,
you can get an oat milk latte or whatever, you know? So I also think a lot of it is like the ones I've read are very much too about like something that seems more like primal or like less like civilized, literally like I'm having to leave human society in some ways to be with my monster lover. So it's also, there's something I think about that that's interesting, that was interesting to me, because it's like being your real self or like getting back in touch with your own sense of like your senses of the world that like humanity has. And the book I'm thinking of, maybe I should give an example, is I read a book also by Tiffany Roberts called Treasure of the Abyss, which is about a kraken. And a woman, although it's like 400 years of settling on this planet called Halora. And her name's Macy. She's 25. And, you know, her sister died when they were younger in the ocean. And she's always felt this like real guilt about it. So her whole life since this happened is essentially like being a good girl and doing what her parents want and following the rules of society, because back when she was a kid and like her and her sister went playing when they weren't supposed to and her sister died. So she's going to essentially marry this man she doesn't really love, but because she's their friends and she doesn't want to disappoint him and it's what everybody thinks she should do. And he takes her out onto the ocean and they are shipwrecked and she is saved by this kraken, Jax. And he kind of kidnaps her, and he at some point says to her, like, you were not being your real self. Like, you were not happy, you were doing everything for everyone else, but if you stay with me, you can be the person that you want to be. So it also felt like this metaphor for, right, like, he was going to offer her something that was outside of the limits of civilization, which were an impediment to her, like, being real with herself.
Mm-hmm.
What's the IAD that starts with her working at Disneyland?
That's Wicked Abyss.
Yeah. And it's just fascinating to me that, like, I feel like it's just this really fluid line from IAD into monsters. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, there's almost nothing in it. So the idea that it's a hard line for you, Jen, is really interesting to me. That, like, one, you're into enough to build a podcast around it, and the other gives you zero pants feelings.
But, okay, nobody in IAD had tentacles. Like, I read the sex scenes in this book and was like,
but they
okay.
had horns. Like, if you're Kate Claiborne, where's the difference there?
But I didn't like the horns.
That was me. That was me who liked the
horns. Yeah, like, you were the horns person.
Very into it.
So maybe that's it. The IAD, it was like, in spite of that stuff, you loved it because the storytelling was so good.
Yeah, maybe.
To me, it felt like, and I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd have to think about it. But like, to me, I mean, maybe the one you were like, this isn't monsters to me, it's mythology. Like vampires and werewolves or whatever, to me, just feel like so normal or normalized that I never thought about them this way. Whereas when I'm thinking about like a dude with tentacles or a gargoyle, or like Nodding, which is like another one I read with, right? I was like, that's now somehow I just, you know, but you're like you said, it's fluid.
Sure.
I mean, it's fluid for me, but.
But I think it comes hand in hand with aliens right now, too. Mm-hmm. Are really, I mean, over the last few years, aliens have become real hot. And I think that there is something to this kind of otherworldliness of the heroes. There's something compelling about maybe a creature who is not human and doesn't come with all the human
baggage
shit that human men come with, right?
Okay, can I be crass for a second? And let's just, if you do not have headphones on,
we don't allow it here.
Human male genitals are poorly designed. Like, the clitoris is the primary female, like, pleasure center, and the penis does nothing to stimulate that. So, in most circumstances, like, it's so, like,
unless you're, like, a gymnast.
Yeah, human male genitals are, like, not well designed for human women. I don't understand why that has happened, but it is.
So, in this one with the Kraken, Treasure of the Abyss, like, at the base of his cock, there's, like, little...
Yeah, they all do. Exactly. I mean, it's Ruby but it's Dixon, not like right? A, Ice Planet Barbarians.
No, no. Right. It's not Robin like a secondary it. Thing that's going to like tickle your ass. It's literally like around the entire base of his penis. There's like little ticklers.
Oh, and like a sea yeah. anemone.
Yes, that's how I pictured it. And I was kind of like, I bet that would feel good. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get this but potential I didn't think it was to sexy. Have like yeah. better sex organs right. with aliens sure. or with monsters.
We
or-
sure. talked about those Satter books, the Elizabeth Amber Satter books, which have to yeah. be some of the earliest of like the modern monster porn or monster books, monster romance. And they have, when they lock in, when they have had their like night long marathon of sex in all
yeah.
ways, like little snake thing comes out and like cleans you up and like cures your
nice.
You know makes everything feel right again.
Nobody no UTIs. And
so, I mean, it is interesting, and there's definitely I mean there's that too, right? I mean, that's a good point, Jenny.
Or you have extra appendages, whether they are spider legs or whether they are tentacles. Like, you are now holding someone's arms above their head by the wrists, and right. you can
you're
touch
big enough for face
you
sitting.
Can touch a clitoris.
All like, these monsters can like. There's no fear about face sitting. It's just
oh yeah,
just they get can right up well, there. Just,
sure. They might have a better tongue. Like there are.
They always have a.
They
better
always
tongue.
Have a better yeah. tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just from like a mechanics standpoint, you can take men and improve them by making them better suited to please parts.
See, you really won me over. Now that seems cool. like a cool thing,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
Now we're like,
I'm like,
oh, yes,
I'm in it now.
When I want to clarify that I talked in very MF terms about the improved sexual function, but it applies the same way to queer. Like, a tentacle is useful no matter what parts you're dealing with, or, you know, like, it applies to all bodies.
I do think that, but here's what I want to say.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the fact that, so I read this orc book. I did a little bit of reading around. I did not stumble in. I did not read the spider book because it ends on a cliffhanger.
Same.
So
I was like, there's sort the of deal breaker for me.
Oh, really?
It's not a full blown cliffhanger. Like,
are they
for
together
that
at the end of that book or not, Jenny?
Yes.
All right. So maybe I'll read the spider book, but the, but I am curious because, and I know we keep talking about this Minotaur book, but I think it's really fascinating, especially in light of also reading these orc books where they really just, so there's something so wholesome about these books. They are
yeah.
fine. They are sexy in that, I mean, that Minotaur book is sexy, right? Yeah. If you're, especially if you're into like semen in some way. I mean, I did not know. I don't think I'm into 24 ounces of semen, but like there's something kind of there, whatever. If that's your kink, like I can see how that would work for you. And there's some, and the sex is great in that book. And there's a lot of it, I guess. But the takeaway from that book, aside from 24 ounces, is not about the sex for me. It was so wholesome and it was like a small town romance. A magnificent small town romance that was not boring. And that is not to say that all small town romances are boring, but they can be very samey. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it's a small town romance without the cupcake shop.
Exactly. I mean, it wasn't a small town, right? It's a city. It's conceived as this city, but it doesn't feel like a city. And I mean, anybody who lives in a city knows that cities don't actually feel like cities. Cities feel like small towns. But it felt very small town. It ended, it had such like a wholesome relationship. He was such a decent dude. There was so much about it that felt like, yeah, easily they could have met while she was doing her job in the cupcake shop, or she could have been the barista in the coffee shop, and it would have worked the same way. And I felt that way about this orc book too, that it felt very small town. It was, you know, the heroine was a hermit, and then she ended up in orc society in this like nice community filled with lovely, you know, human women who had all been abducted and or sold into this orc community, and now they loved and, you know, we're all having babies. And so I think there is a part of me that feels like some of these authors are taking the bones of really traditional structures in romance. I mean, and not just traditional structures, truly bedrock. Small town romance is bedrock. Small town romance is Emma and like Pride and Prejudice, right? We are talking about the roots of the genre and moving them forward and just layering the story with something that's different, something fascinating. And I think we talk, when Sophie Jordan talks about high concept romance, one of the things that she talks about is that when you're trying to write something really high concept, you have to think about it as exactly the same and completely different. Like if you stray too far from the bones of what you're writing, readers won't go with you. But
it's not like other romances.
Layer it.
We like, want it to be like other romances.
Right. We want it to be like other romance, right.
But at the same time, if you write the same thing that everyone else is writing, you won't ever boost out of, you know, you'll just be the next one like candy. There's no moment that's the trick is figuring out how to layer a new idea over a deeply old one. And that's what these feel like to me.
That was my experience too. And I want to add, one of the people I did a little research, but I also contacted one of our listeners, Alyssa Long, who had a really interesting thread about how monsters have been for a really long time an allegory for disabilities. And I asked her, I sort of was like in a DM, was kind of like, anything you want, you know, anything you think I should have read or talked about. And one of the things she said about Morning Glory Milking Farm was, and I don't think she'd mind me quoting this, is she said, the monster town had accommodations for each different kind. And it made me really think about how I would feel if I stumbled upon a town that tried to make itself for me instead of the other way around. And I think that is something also about a lot of these books is, and this is what I liked, as opposed to, I think one of the problems when you think about like monsters as a disability is, and this is like the Beauty and the Beast kind of thing, is it's a curse. And then when you are good enough, it gets like fixed or removed. And I like that a lot of these monster romances, the goal is not to not be a monster anymore. Like that's no part of
the monster experience is just coded into the world building.
Right. So another example I read, and it's a novella, but Sarah, I think you're really onto something because I really teed into like what I think this novella is setting up. So I read a novella by Emily Hemingway called Flesh and Stone, and it's pretty short. And what happens is it starts off in like 1840s New York, where a witch curses like a hunter. He's like a hunting her, and she turns him into a gargoyle. And then it's 2021, and essentially this woman comes into the churchyard and sees him and touches him, and he like all of a sudden he kind of breaks free. And the whole time I was kind of worried, like, okay, what if she like fixes him? And that is not the case, right? Like he stays a gargoyle. And basically, he spent, you know, the 150 years of gargoyledom, like, kind of figuring out what his, like, body can do now, and he has wings and all this stuff. But it's very sweet. But the way it ends, and it's, a little bit of a spoiler alert, but you could probably see it coming, so if you don't like spoilers, skip ahead, is he returns to his, like, 1840s, like, monster hunting organization is now a 2021 monster hunting organization. And he can still, like, work for them. And I found myself thinking, like, I want to read the next book in this series, right? I want to read about the monster hunting organization. But it's essentially, like, straight-up romantic suspense in terms of the setup, right? And so that whole idea of, like, oh, a team of assassins is going to make their own little team and go out into the world and fight bad guys. So I did find myself thinking the same thing, like, I see what this is doing, but it's a gargoyle instead of a Navy SEAL.
Yeah. Which is interesting because I wonder if we're in that case, right? You're taking these kind of archetypal heroes who are starting to feel like they don't 100% fit in anymore.
Yeah.
The cowboy, the Navy SEAL, the whatever, that they don't fit into the way contemporary romance is moving. Does that make sense?
So what we have talked about a lot is that paranormal is the place where, and Jenny and I were talking about this earlier, paranormal was the place for a long time that, like, the bonkers romance plot, right, could live. And you could be sort of cut free of the moorings of, like, realistic fiction.
And then we've said for seasons that we think that erotic romance is where some of the most interesting work in romance is being done now.
Yeah.
I mean, so it makes sense to me that, like, monster romance could be serving a similar function.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have...
It's pairing these two in some way, but...
Right. But, I love Jenny's point about it being mythology, about it being, like, improved sex. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, like, a lot of things that we're constantly talking about in the genre, but it's a way to push past sort of... And I... You know what? I'm going to say something else. My favorite part about it is... One of the things I feel like romance readers always have to deal with is, like, you know, you're just reading these because it's fantasy and, like, what about real men? And that's when you get to be like, well, I'm in fact reading about a Kraken.
Yeah. So there.
So yeah. There. So, Jenny, do you have another book that you want to talk about? Or I have one want to.
Feel like I've barely even talked about books. So,
I know, right? So I know you brought some with you. So we should definitely make some recommendations.
So you talked about books being softer, Sarah, mm-hmm. and one that really surprised me in that way is when I say the title Stalked by the Kraken by Lillian Lark, you're picturing a certain thing, right? Like this book has a vibe, and it does not have that vibe at all. It is one of the softest romances I've read in a long time, and the heroine is a witch. She works in this, like, sex spa where people go to, it's like they go to fuck there, but they're not like a brothel. It's that they, like, it's magical creatures who go there to do it, and they, like, pull, when magical creatures do it, they give off magic, and this spa absorbs their magic, and then they sell the magic. And she's a matchmaker, so she can, like, see people's threads, and she has had a bad breakup and doesn't trust her matchmaking abilities anymore because she thought she was a perfect match for this guy and she wasn't. So she's really out of her element. She's not practicing right now. And at the very beginning, this Kraken sees her, lights up, and is like, that is my mate. Like, it's the insta-fated mates, like, from page one. He must have her. But he doesn't want to, like, scare the shit out of her.
How does the Kraken meet? See her?
Yeah. He's sitting in, like, a bar.
Oh, like, he's not in water.
He is like a treasure hunter,
sure,
who's, like, solving a crime. Yes. There's a whole subplot.
That all makes
it
sense.
Doesn't matter.
Sure.
romance
stuff. Yeah. And so he tries to, like, approach her slowly to be like, you know, I don't want to come in and be like, I am a Kraken and you are my one and only mate. I must have you. So he goes in and is like, you know, I want to be a client here, but I want to do this with you. And so they, like, do it together. And of course, like, they go on some dates first and he reveals that he's a Kraken. And it's just so, like, sweet and wholesome. And he is so, like, gone for her from page one and just spends the whole book trying to be, like, gentle and nurturing and, like, take care of her and help her to heal from this breakup. And, you know, we get the obligatory scene where, like, the ex-boyfriend tries to come back, but now she's with, like, the big bad Kraken. And
nice.
I was shocked by how wholesome it was. But it is, that's one where he's, like, human, and then during sex he gets the tentacles that come out. And everybody who has read it after I've recommended it has been like, I did not think I was into tentacles. But she doesn't go, like, overboard with the tentacles. Like, for me, it was almost not far enough with the tentacles. Like, if you're going to have tentacles, I want, like, tentacle bondage and DP and, like, double penetration, if anybody's not sure what that means. And this was not that. It was really just, like, this intimacy between them, and it was really sweet. And there's tentacles there for, like, pleasure, but really not anything scary or gross or weird going on with the tentacles. So it would be, like, a good intro for
people. So nice. I'm going to get that. I'm getting it right now.
Yes. My work here is done.
Stalked by the Kraken.
Well, and the next book in that series is called Three of Hearts, and it's, like, a harpy, a demon, and a werewolf.
Can I say
like a poly relationship?
This is interesting because I also think this is fascinating. With if I found this, I found this with a few of the authors that I was trying this week, where you then get you're like, okay, I'm in on Krakens, and then the next book is three totally different monsters. And then I'm like, oh, God, now I have to be in on these? I just figured out how Krakens work, and now there's something else. So I think that's really fascinating.
See, and I feel like that wouldn't bother me because I feel like maybe that is the ID thing where I'm like, sure, of course, sometimes like the witches and the demons get together. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I guess there's some, like the orc series tend to go orcs.
I mean, the orcs feel like Highlanders to me.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a kind of
like a warrior race of
There's like a
kilt wearing Scots.
There's a clan. The clan has a leader. It's, you know, whatever it is. And everybody has their role in this like thatched cottage community.
Yeah.
You know,
when we did our bonkers romance episode about orcs with Naima Simone, oh my God, it was so good. But I compared it to the Vikings in early Britain.
Similar.
Yeah.
Because the Vikings have come over on their ships. They've started this civilization, but they left their women behind. So they don't have any women, but they're also like pretty and they bathe and they go down on you and they are superior to the British men. So the British men are like, no, they're going to, you know,
steal our
kill
women.
You and fuck your corpse. But really, they're going to make you come. So,
yes.
Fair. Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. That was what it felt like to me.
I did read a book I really liked, but I feel like now I'm like, it's maybe not monster enough, but I'm going to argue if there's nodding, I feel like it has moved from just like straight whatever.
Would you like to explain to the class what nodding is, Jen?
Yeah, Jen.
Yes, first of all, in a minute. I'm going to explain in a minute. Wait, let me tell you the plot first, then I'm going to get to the nodding. Okay, so the book is called The Alpha's Warlock by Elliot Grayson, and this is a series of male-male romances set in sort of like a small town, and there's like sort of this local werewolf pack called the Armitage Pack. And they're struggling a bit. Like, they're not as wealthy as they should be. You know, there's somebody mismanaged something like a generation back. But in this one, a local warlock, and again, like these read as very like young men to me in their 20s, Nate Hawthorne, is kidnapped by the local bad guy werewolf pack. And the bad guy werewolves essentially are going to use Nate's magic. They're going to bind Nate's magic to one of their werewolves in like some kind of like essentially a mating ritual. Like they'll be mates. And then that guy will be able to like siphon off all of Nate's like warlock energy. And Nate manages to essentially escape. Like he freaks out and just like has like basically a magic panic attack. And he like runs off, right? And he makes his way back to the Armitage Pack. And he basically says to them, like, I escaped after they started this ritual. So if I don't bond to one of your wolves, then I'm going to die. Because I, like, essentially the magic has to go somewhere. So he ends up getting mated to Ian, who is, you know, they have, like, this enemies to lovers vibe for reasons. What I really loved about this book was, like, it's really snarky, kind of funny tone, right? I don't know. Like, it just felt, like, really, like, Nate's kind of a smartass, and he's constantly, like, being an asshole to Ian, who's, like, all gruff and serious because he's a werewolf. So at one point, he's like, you know, fuck you, Ian. And Ian's like, the other way around, actually. And I was like, kind of, my God's like, all right, it made me laugh. So Ian, in order to secure the mating bond, he has to fuck Nate, of course. And, you know, Nate's no stranger to anal sex, but apparently the nodding thing is once you're in there, then there's like a part of the penis that will like expand and kind of like lock in like it's a knot, like a anchor, I guess. I don't know. And then that's like a really big part of the mating experience. And then like after you come, it'll like slowly go down. It's like a super hard on. Maybe is how I would describe it. But to me, I was like, that whole nodding business to me seems like a further, right? There's some sort of, that's more than just regular sex. So that to me made it seem.
Some magic penis.
Yeah, I think anytime there's like different genitals or like magical semen, you start to get into that territory more.
Yeah, yeah. I also really liked in this one, And maybe this has to do with why what I is like, there was no will they or won't they energy in the book. It was like, you're going to die. I have to fuck you. And I was fine with that.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, similar to paranormal, you can raise the stakes way up.
Yes.
Sure.
Like, yes.
It's right. Life or death stakes or like, yeah, you can, your romance right. Reasons expand.
Can get way bigger. And you know what? I also really, you know, characters backing into a corner are my favorite. So to have Nate essentially be like, I have no choice. You know, we have no choice. We have to be mated. I was like, great. I really want to read this. So. But I would also call it like monster fucking light. It felt very similar to other things I had read, but just like this extra level.
Hmm.
Yes.
An interesting one is A Lady of Rooksgrave Manor by Catherine Moon.
This is a good test balloon one. I feel like if you've never read a monster romance or you've done paranormal and you're not really sure where we're going, what we're talking about, this is a good test balloon.
Especially because they get less monstery instead of more monstery for the sex parts. But so the character is a sex worker in like a brothel that caters to monsters. And so during the book, she ends up with like six boyfriends.
Yeah, there's like a golem and a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lion, like a is there a griffin?
Nope, I'm blank. But yes,
it's like part lion
creatures. So you could, it's, you know, it's like a sample platter of monsters. You test it out, see what tickles
it's
your
like,
fancy.
Yeah, it's an appetizer.
It's like wings, mozzarella sticks.
Like this is one where the MF becomes really glaring for me. Where I was like, can I just have some queer options in here? Like, can I have Medusa or you know, like there's some good options out there, but. Hopefully somebody's going to start writing me more. But yeah, this would be a good, like, test out the waters, see how you feel about it. A short one, if someone wanted to, like, dip their toes but not fully commit, Skin by Aveda Vice is, like, a gargoyle and a banshee. Mm-hmm. And she can't touch anyone or she can, like, feel what they're feeling. So it's
I like that.
Critically important.
Sarah loves that.
That's one of my favorite things.
She's poisoned everyone, right?
She's got, like, the gloves and the whatever, but she can also feel objects. So at the beginning, she, like, takes her glove off to feel the object and they get ambushed. And the gargoyle is the hero. And he's, like, her bodyguard when she's out doing the like feel the objects thing. And so they get ambushed. He shields her from bullets, takes the bullets for her. But in the process of that, she has her glove off and she touches him. So now she can like feel what he's feeling. And but also it's like, well, it's done now. And you're the only person who can touch me. But in touching him, she discovers that he has been in love with her for like ever.
Oh,
and he's been hiding it. And he's even now trying to, like, tamp down on it. So she's like, it's a small thing. And he kind of looks at her and, like, lets go of his hold on it. And she realizes it is not a small thing.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's another one Alyssa recommended as being particularly good, too. So that was going to go on my list. Yes.
I'm buying that one, too.
It's short. It's, like, 14,000 words.
Okay.
So you just get, like, the setup and then the sex, which... You know, is a delight.
I mean, what more do I need, truthfully?
It's like a little snack. Yeah. Well, and I think, like, that's back to the whole idea of, right, like, if it's a punishment that you're, like, disfigured and disabled and then you go back, that's part of the thing that's especially egregious, I guess, in terms of, like, reading these as allegories for disability. So I'm glad to hear that there's some examples like that. Yeah.
A thing that it also reminds me of is the idea that this otherness is a bad thing, and then you discover that it's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And I think I feel that with, like, I have obsessive compulsive disorder, and or, like, I think I might also be on the spectrum. I have friends who are on the spectrum. And it's, like, because that's other, it's seen as a bad thing. Like, you have a harder time interacting or, you know, it's something that should be treated or medicated or whatever. But when it's your reality and you, like, find someone who loves you for those things, not in spite of those things, it can be really powerful. So, you know, like, my husband appreciating the parts of my obsessive compulsive disorder that other people might have tried to fix in the past was just so powerful for me. And that's not to say that people with obsessive compulsive disorder are monsters, because clearly I'm not saying that. But there's something in there for me that, like, you are other and that they love you exactly as you are. Like, they don't want you to change. The fact that you are other is actually a benefit by the end of the book.
I don't know. I mean, I think the thing about romance is always about, like, love and radical acceptance, like this idea that, like, everyone deserves love. And so I think it makes sense that, like, monster romance would be unpacking, I mean, of course, unpacking similar themes because it's still a romance. But without, but, you know, if we read romance, like sort of contemporary romance where, you know, the goal was to fix someone at the end, we wouldn't like that. So we should be able to maybe apply those same lessons to any romance that we read.
Yeah, for sure.
So I want to talk about a book that is out of print, because I'm sad that it is out of print. But several years ago, I read Marion Pereira's The Beast Prince, which was published by Samhain back in the day when Samhain existed. And it remains on my Kindle as one of my very favorite, what I thought was paranormal romances. I think it might be a monster romance. I don't know. It might not be. But yeah, basically, the premise of this book is that the world building is so, so stellar. But the idea is that it's this pretty bleak world, and it is run by a quartet of princes who are the product of, like, a goddess and a human. And they are able to transform themselves into the earth, the literal earth. So, like, they can make mudslides or lava or rock formations. They can create islands in seas. Like, they are the thing. So, like, the hero becomes a lava flow in order to, you know, decimate a town or something. I mean, it's not
cool.
These are bad, generally perceived as bad, monstrous men. And they roam this earth. And when a town, when they appear on the outskirts of a town, there is a belief that a sacrifice has to be sent to them. So the heroine, who is a sharpshooter and captain of the guard, her name is Katsumi. She is sent off to be made to appease, essentially, and sacrifice herself to this earth prince in order to save her town, like, essentially. And she gets there, and he is in his human form, and he basically kind of bosses her around for a while before it becomes clear that he has lost his powers. And so he is, like, unable to do any of the things that he has done for millennia, because he can no longer, I can't remember if he's cursed or not, but something's happened and he's lost his powers. And he's in hiding on the outskirts of this town, because if his brothers find out that he has lost his powers, they're going to come and they're going to kill him. And so what ends up happening is it sort of flips and they fall in love, and she has to protect this beast prince, this man who has wreaked devastation on lands from others. And it is tremendously cool. The world building is great. The writing is superb. And I, as far as, you know, the last time I checked, it was out of print. So if you can find
a dirty tease and no one wants it,
if you can find an old copy of it, Marion is, I believe, on Twitter. I have tweeted at her and said, like, hey, what's the deal on these? She also writes fantasy. But I think it was in print in some places, so you might be able to find an old copy of it somewhere. I don't know. Tweet at her and tell her you want her to put it up.
Yeah. Yeah, give it to me.
Because I want everyone to read it. I was really, like, it's very cool. So yeah, I am teasing you all. I try not to talk about books that are out of print, but
sometimes one
felt like a hero who can actually become the earth.
Yeah, that's pretty
real cool. Real cool.
Yeah.
Well, and that to me definitely seems like mythological, right? Like, I think I've been thinking so much about it. I know I will be for, like, a long time, but sometimes to me, like the difference between like monster and mythology might just be like the sphere of influence.
Hmm.
What mm-hmm. Zeus can do versus what like one Kraken can do. Those seem different to me. And maybe they're not. Maybe it's just time, right? But I think that's like a really, I will be spending a lot of time thinking about that because I think it's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
Well, I hope I get text messages about it.
Yeah, in the middle of the night, I'll be like, okay, but what about?
And I'm going to be sending you dirty mythological images now.
I will be putting them all in show notes. It's going to be amazing.
Excellent. You know, one thing that is not monster related, but I just feel like I did not sing Jen's praises as enthusiastically as I would like to. We talked about you editing like a finished book and it's done and it's ready to be like developmentally edited or, you know, you can give feedback on that. But something else that Jen just did for me that was amazing is she brainstormed the next book with me and let me not walk into the traps that I did on the first book that were going to cause me to have to do a whole bunch of rewriting. And it was amazing. And if somebody has like the idea and the outline and they're like about to get really heavily into the writing, I feel like that would be so helpful as well, because you can do this magical thing where I was like, all right, it is a rock star romance. She's a former escort. It's second chance romance. Like they were really young. And I started laying it out and Jen was immediately able to clue into like, these are the things that the reader is going to automatically want to see. Mm-hmm. Like you lay out that premise and these are my expectations. And those things sound really obvious, but I think when you're writing the story, sometimes you can get so into the characters and the weeds and the details of the plot that you can miss one of those checkboxes. And missing that checkbox is the difference between a decent book and a great book. So
I don't know what to say. I'm like very like,
Jen, you're a star.
I will say, my favorite moment of that phone call was at one point, Jenny was like, okay, but like this thing is kind of the same. And I was like, that's your core story. Yes. And I literally, Jenny's voice was like, oh shit. She literally, I mean, it was actually kind of a great moment. I was that's like, yeah, awesome. That's your core story.
Yeah, and don't touch that.
It was like writing therapy in brainstorm form where Jen like gave me permission to tell this story. And I got off the phone and like finished this book where I had like parts and pieces was then a finished outline that felt like I can dive in and be really confident that this is going the direction that I want it to go.
I love it.
It's hard to take compliments, so I will just say thank you.
You're amazing.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Her magical romance brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you get for reading nothing but romance for many, 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 many decades.
Jen, do you have a website up? Because I know everybody is now, I hope like, what it, do I do if yeah, I want Jen's
brain? It will be up by the time this airs. So all my editing information is you can find at jenreadsromance.com.
Perfect. Yeah. Jenny Norbeck, thanks for coming and talking to us about monsters. Thanks for the very illuminating week of reading you delivered us.
Oh, yeah.
And
I did. It was fascinating.
Will you please tell everyone? The book is called His Leading Lady, and it is in stores now. And will you please tell everyone where they can find you on the interwebs?
Bonkers Romance is the new podcast. So that is bonkersromance.com, any of your podcast players, Bonkers Romance on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Or if you want to find me personally, I am Jenny Nordback, which does not have a C in it. Everybody puts a C in it on all the platforms, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and whatever. So thank you guys.
You all are listening to Fated Mates. You can find us at fatedmates.net. You can find gear and stickers and other things linked there under merch. You can find us on Twitter at Fated Mates, on Instagram at Fated Mates Pod, and wherever you listen to podcasting things. Please, if you have time, to like and follow us on your podcatcher of choice. We would be very grateful. Hope you're reading some really great books this week.
Happy Halloween. Now is the time.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thanks.